Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Contends that something big is happening among the rich in America. We're drifting to the left. His research shows that many of the rich still back GOP politics when it comes to taxes and regulation, but liberalism is spreading fast among the wealthy. With groundbreaking research and profiles of key wealthy individuals, he explains how the ranks of liberal rich keep growing thanks to an ongoing change in the economy and the liberalization of the elite educational institutions, and how this is going to become ever more powerful as time goes on. The cosmopolitan elite, they take it for granted the key liberal ideas such as multiculturalism, active government, and have less in common with the extremist GOP that sort of dominates small-town America and dominate the Tea Party with the likes of Sarah Palin. David Callen is a senior fellow at Demos. He's the author of the book Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich. He's also the author of Cheating Culture and The Moral Center. Welcome to the show, David. How are you today?
Great to be here. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Now, it's interesting because you started your research on this book 3 years ago, and we were in a completely different place in the economy 3 years ago. We had a housing boom that was going on. The stock market was still surging 3 years ago. And at the time, when you first started the research, you were already concerned about the rising inequality between the rich and the not-so-rich in this country and our drift towards plutocratic rule, as you put it. But then in January of 2008, two events jolted you and sent you in a different direction, and it was kind of surprising. The first one was Bill Gates gave a speech at Davos, Switzerland, in which he faulted capitalism for failing to meet the needs of the world's poorest people. And the second event, unrelated to that, was Walmart CEO Lee Scott announcing sweeping plans to make the company more environmentally responsible. How and why did these two separate events influence your book, Fortunes of Change?
Well, I found it pretty remarkable that in just 1 month, two of the very visible corporate leaders in America had expressed liberal ideas. I mean, when you can question Walmart's commitment to sustainability and its environmental policies, but the fact that he was even the CEO was standing up and saying, "Look, these environmental problems are real. Climate change is real. We need to take action as a company." To me, that was surprising because you think of Walmart as a pretty conservative company.
They are, yes.
But that apparently has changed in recent years. Meanwhile, Bill Gates, really one of the most ruthless monopolists of the information age during his day, building Microsoft, kind of the John D. Rockefeller of the information age, if you will. To come out at a visible forum at Davos and say, capitalism is not working for the poorest people, that to me suggested that Bill Gates, who is also the richest American, was really changing his thinking and maybe his political ideology. And those two events got me kind of looking more closely at some other things going on with the rich, like all the money that they were giving to the Democratic Party, the number of billionaires who were pumping money into liberal think tanks in Washington, people like George Soros or Peter Lewis, the car insurance magnate, and I started kind of putting together these different pieces and saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not the Republican rich of our grandparents or parents' generation. Something different is going on here.
Interesting, because, David, I'm going to challenge you on one of the two. I think that Bill Gates was definitely remarkable coming out of Davos and saying about capitalism. That was an important comment. But with Lee Scott, at the time, they were in the midst of the salary problems that they were having paying overtime. A lot of negative press about Walmart was going on. Could this not, and I'm putting on my skeptic's hat right now, could this not have been a deflection sort of thing to get people's minds off of the wage inequality and the lawsuits that they were facing and saying, you know, we're going to be more environmentally responsible now as a company and look at the robot, you know, look at this shiny object over here, environmentalism, and forget about the wages that are going on over here?
I think that's a good point, and certainly there was some of that happening, you know, Walmart wanting to stand up and position itself as a good guy and to deal with its growing brand image as really being a kind of ruthless company. On the other hand, you know, since that time, since that sweeping pronouncement about its new sustainability policies, Walmart has actually taken, you know, a number of significant steps to follow through on that. So, you know, there's plenty of so-called greenwashing by corporate America, you know, pretending to be environmentally sound. And, you know, there's a lot of posturing and positioning, no question about it. But if you look at the spread of environmental kind of thinking within corporate America, it's really quite striking. You know, there's plenty of greenwashing, but there's also some real change going on. And I think that that reflects the fact that many corporate leaders are worried about climate change and they're worried about dependence on fossil fuel. I mean, we saw during the climate change debate earlier this summer that thousands of business leaders, you know, had signed a letter to the Senate saying, hey, you know, it's time to set a price on carbon. And that included many major businesses, you know, Google, kind of a leading example in that regard.
Well, even more remarkable, T. Boone's Pickens, one of the wealthiest men in this country who made his money on the back of oil, is actually now proposing clean, sustainable energy sources. So that's very interesting. We're talking to David Callahan, everybody. He's the well-spoken author of the book Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich and the Remaking of America. Now, I found your book was fascinating, David, but probably for different reasons than you may imagine. And the reason is that I was clued off to these changes in demographics a while ago. I mean, if you look at Forbes 400, the wealthiest people in America, this really showed the changing demographics as far back as 2005. When they first started the list, it was 1981, and most of the names on the Forbes 400 were names that you always associated with money, the Rockefellers, the Gettys, the Vanderbilts, even the Waltons, the founders of Walmart. And their fortunes made up a significant portion of the U.S. household wealth. But by 2005, 24 years later, only 40 of the original 400 remained on the list, and their combined wealth of the 40 that were still on it was only $2 trillion out of the $52 trillion in U.S. household wealth. Two big factors were driving that change. Number one was the technology wealth, money that was made in computers and software like Bill Gates, and in the entertainment industry, what you call in your book knowledge workers. And two, more and more U.S. households were becoming invested in the stock market via IRAs, 401ks, retirement plans, et cetera, et cetera. What impact is the changing demographic having on the country's elite?
Well, what's happened is that in the last quarter century, America has really moved from a manufacturing to a knowledge economy. And the people who are getting rich today are not the people who make money by drilling for oil or mining, you know, in West Virginia or chopping down trees in the Pacific Northwest or making cars in Detroit. The people who are getting rich are the people who are making iPhones and iPads or creating companies like Google or, you know, using advanced algorithms to manage money with hedge funds. We've seen the rise of this knowledge economy and a shift of money towards the highly educated workers who prosper in that economy. The other big thing that's happened with the Forbes 400 demographically is that over 50% of the list now have postgraduate degrees, whereas 25 years ago, you know, many of them didn't even have college degrees. You know, and money has moved to the West Coast, that there's many more billionaires in California now than there used to be. There's many more millionaires in California than there used to be. And that's where the knowledge economy is centered. And these more educated, wealthy people, they're not really very sympathetic to the kind of Rush Limbaugh, Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck brand of conservatism that the GOP is increasingly espousing. You know, the Republican Party has become kind of anti-intellectual, very based in rural and small-town America, quite xenophobic in many instances, and that just doesn't really, you know, jive well with a lot of these new knowledge economy rich.
That makes sense. We're talking to David Callahan, everybody. So break it down for us, David. In your book, really, you've got four major explanations of why things are shifting to the left among the wealthy. What are those four things?
Well, one is the knowledge economy, the rise of the knowledge economy we just discussed. But there's other things going on, too. The extremism of the Republican Party, especially during the Bush years, unnerved a lot of very wealthy people, including George Soros, most notably, who was quite disturbed by the war in Iraq and the kind of the seeming jingoism of the Republican Party. Soros has spent tens of millions of dollars bankrolling so-called 527 liberal organizations, as well as a lot of think tanks and other groups. Another trend that's going on, though, has been the growth of inherited wealth, that there's more money cascading down in intergenerational transfers. So-called heirs are, you know, getting coming into their money, and a lot of these people tend to be more liberal than their parents or grandparents for kind of obvious reasons, which is, you know, when you make a fortune, sometimes you gotta, you know, you're worried about fighting those government regulators, or maybe you're worried about your all the red tape around business. But if you inherit money, you know, you don't have any of that mindset, and so you might be quite sympathetic to liberal ideas and those kind of Republican fiscal conservative ideology that may not really have much traction with you. So those are some of the other shifts that have been going on. And in addition, we've seen a lot of very wealthy people who made a lot of money in the 80s and 90s getting out of their businesses, selling their businesses, and turning their energies to solving social problems. Bill Gates is the most notable example. You know, when you're running a company like Microsoft, you have different interests and a different mindset than when you're retired and you're a philanthropist. You just do. And so as wealth shifts away, as wealthy people shift away from making money and start to focus on giving it away, often they become more liberal.
We're talking to David Callahan, everybody. He's the author of the book, Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich and the Remaking of America. And when we come back, David, after this short commercial break, I do want to talk about billionaire philanthropy, because there is a double-edged sword there that I want to get out on the table to make sure that it's not all roses and sunshine when Bill Gates starts to give the money, that there can be some negative downsides to that as well. We'll not discuss that now. We'll discuss it after we get back after this short break.
And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Or you can listen to us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. Today's theme for the show is all about money. And my special guest this half hour is David Callahan. He's the author of the book, Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich and the Remaking of America. And David, before we went away to commercial break, we were talking about the four main drivers for this shift in political affiliation towards more liberal politics among the wealthy. And we just began talking about billionaire philanthropy, which I think is an important subject, so I want to get it out on the table. It's absolutely vital that the wealthy step up and sort of fill the gaps that we have in the social net that we've got, social safety net that we've got out there. But at what cost is it to the public policy? Aren't we allowing the rich to really exert double influence on politics because they contribute to political campaigns and they also contribute to NGOs, non-governmental organizations, that are also influencing policy? For example, in 2006, Education Week magazine named Bill Gates the single most influential person in education in the past decade, ironically, even though it was President George W. Bush who passed the No Child Left Behind law. So for every Bill Gates, there's also, I can't remember the guy, the name up in Northern California, he owns a winery, very conservative and uses his money for conservative issues. So don't a Bill Gates and the conservative wealthy people sort of cancel each other out?
Yeah, and in many ways what we're seeing is the battle of the billionaires.
That's right.
And over the direction of this country's civic and political life. And I just find that very disturbing in a nation which is supposed to be about the idea of one person, one vote. And it's pretty clear that somebody like Bill Gates has a heck of a lot more power over public policy and an issue like education than you or me. And so, you know, there's an irony here in that the liberal rich in particular, you know, they care about social problems. They want to get involved in civic life. You know, all of that is good, but they pose a threat to democracy in that they kind of, with all their money and their power and their, you know, visibility, can kind of marginalize and push aside other voices in the civic space, you know, more ordinary Americans. So the more, so in a funny way, you know, the more these liberal rich people who are out trying to make the world and America a better place, the less strong our democracy is in some ways, and that's a real double-edged sword that I explore in my book.
Well, and I think it's one that we need to have a national discussion about. Let me ask you this. In the research for your book, you're talking about the liberals who want to change social and civic life, which I think is great. Are those same liberals willing to give up more of their income through taxation and everything else in order to achieve that goal? Are they just as anxious to hold on to their wealth as the robber barons of the 19th century?
Many liberal rich people don't have a problem paying higher taxes. And you saw that clearly in the Obama campaign that, you know, a lot of these rich donors to Obama, they knew that the president planned to raise, that Obama would raise taxes if he got elected, and they gave money to him anyway. You know, even these hedge fund managers who Obama had singled out, saying that he was really going to raise taxes for that crowd, those people gave more money to Obama than they gave to John McCain. And the attitude among a lot of these rich liberals is, A, they can afford it because they got plenty of money, but B, they think that, you know, taxes are okay because we need to invest in the foundations of this knowledge economy, that the knowledge economy requires big investments in education and scientific research and infrastructure. And, you know, the attitude of many of these people is, look, you know, we're all going to get richer. We're all going to get more rich over the long term if we make these investments, even if it means higher taxes in the short term. It's better to pay higher tax rates in a booming nation than pay lower tax rates with a sluggish economy.
We're talking to David Callahan, everybody, author of the book, Fortunes of Change, and we're having a great discussion about how the wealthy are really shifting their political leanings more to the left. Now, interestingly enough, the past 5 to 7 years, a lot of new money has come from investment banking, from Wall Street, the financial world, and these nouveau riches really made their money on the backs of less regulation, less government interference, et cetera, et cetera. In your research, when you ran across these investment bankers and so forth, you know, what was their opinion about the shifting of values in the wealthy class?
Well, it's a kind of a complicated story. It's hard to generalize about these people because it is a big financial sector. I look in particular at some of the hedge fund people. These are the people who are making the most money. You know, you have several of these hedge fund guys who made over $1 billion last year.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found interesting about some of these people is that, you know, they're not the kind of prototypical Wall Streeter, you know, frat boy turned stock trader. Many of them instead are mathematicians or computer scientists turned investors who are using complex, you know, logarithms and other formulas to figure out how to make money. Some of them have PhDs from universities and have spent time in the academy, and many of them are Democrats. And I use that as a an example of how, you know, the nature of wealth creation is changing, with more educated people making a lot more money and using their education to make money, and that many of those people, you know, they don't like regulation. You know, they don't necessarily want the federal government on their back, but on the other hand, they are quite liberal in their outlook, and I think that explains why a lot of them gave so much money to Obama, and many of them are actually now quite unhappy with Obama because, you know, he did many of the things he promised to do, and, you know, some of them don't like it, but others of them have stuck with the president, so... That's the story with Wall Street.
Well, I think that it's interesting that these quants, as I call them, the guys that are the quantitative analysts that come off of Wall Street and everything else, rely so heavily on education. But as we started the conversation at the beginning of this interview, we're starting to see a real bifurcation in this country between the educated and the not educated, the wealthy and the haves, the have-nots, and that sort of thing. How do you see us really resolving that? If the wave of the future is towards more education, smarter people, bringing more value to the economy, how is our educational system going to catch up and support that? Or are we going to just be worried and relying on people who get an education outside of the United States coming here to the United States to make their money?
It's really crucial that we make major new investments in education, you know, starting at the preschool level, where so much research shows the preschool has a big impact. So many low-income kids don't have access to that preschool education. And then, of course, fixing the K through 12 system and also dealing with the rising costs of a college education. And, you know, this is... I think education has become one of the big public policy battles of our time, and your point is exactly right about this growing class divide. And today in America, a not so smart wealthy kid has a much better chance of going to college than a brilliant poor kid. And I think that is upside down in terms of the supposed values of America as a land of equal opportunity. And so I look in my book at how that education battle is playing out in the among the rich. A lot of these wealthy liberals really get education. Education is, in fact, for many of them, their main issue. And some of them have poured millions of dollars of their own money or more. Bill Gates has spent $2 billion on education issues here in the U.S. Eli Broad has spent hundreds of millions of dollars, another billionaire.
Had money, yes.
These people are worried that America is not only growing into a deeply divided society by class, but is falling behind in terms of our international competitors and the investments that China and India and Europe are making in their education systems.
Well, let's talk about college education for just a minute, because we had a national debate about health care, which was a truncated debate, but it was a national debate nonetheless about healthcare and the rising healthcare costs. If anybody really looked at the cost of a college education, the inflation rate for a college education is running well ahead of the inflation rate for healthcare or just about anything else in the United States, and yet it doesn't seem to get anyone's attention. Why is that?
Well, it gets the attention of every middle-class family with kids approaching college age or
it does.
College. Actually, I think it's gotten a fair amount of attention. And, you know, one of the interesting things that happened when Congress passed that health care bill is that it took the opportunity to stick a provision in that bill that had nothing to do with health care, but rather dealt with college loans, and in effect shifted tens of billions of dollars away from private loan companies. And that money will end up in the pocket of students. That didn't get much attention, but you know, trying to make college more affordable is, I think, an issue that President Obama and the Democrats take very seriously. But you know, it costs some serious money, and they have ponied up some of that money. But it's still a challenge. And this is an example of where the kind of right and the left diverge. People on the left and the upper class, on the liberal rich, say, hey, you know, you got to make that investment in education in order to have prosperity. and people on the right are more focused on tax cuts, you know, as a way to and deregulation as a motivator of or a creator of prosperity. And I think that in my mind, the record is much more clearly shows that investing in education is the path to prosperity, not tax cuts.
We're talking to David Callahan, everybody, author of the book Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich and the Remaking of America. David, you're also a senior fellow at Demos. Tell me, what is Demos and what's your role there?
It is a think tank. It's based in New York, actually pronounced Demos.
I'm sorry, Demos. And, my apologies.
We work on a whole gamut of public policy issues. You know, we work on these student loan and education access issues we've just been talking about. We've been working on the issue of credit card debt, which is another problem facing the middle class. We're working on the financial reform battle in Washington. We work on issues of voting and opportunity, at the ballot for ordinary citizens to change things. So it's a national think tank.
And what is your role at Demos?
I'm one of the co-founders of Demos, and now I'm a senior fellow.
Well, congratulations. It's been a pleasure talking to you. We've been speaking to David Callahan, author of the book Fortunes of Change, The Rise of the Liberal Rich and the Remaking of America. David, your book is really just out, brand new. If people want to get a hold of it and read what you have to say, where would you direct them?
I would go to Amazon to buy a copy there or your local independent bookstore.
Great. And if they wanted to learn more about Demos, where would you direct them for that?
www.demos.org, DEMOS.ORG.
Oh, that's great. David Callahan, thanks. You've been a delightful guest. It's been a pleasure talking with you here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Great. My pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay. Take care.